Hi, and welcome to Out on the Edge, where co-hosts Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu, three queer, weird sisters Shakespeare could not have imagined, present an all-ages tour of what it's like to be gay and gray in North Carolina in these oh-so-interesting times. For today's episode, November 3rd, 2025, we're delighted to have one of my personal superheroes, Mac McCord, musician, composer, puppeteer, playwright, dog whisperer, Army veteran, husband of our own Judy McCord, and feisty activist for queer rights to tell us about his amazing life. Yo, Mac! First, though, we'd like to give a shout-out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carver at 103.5 FM for hosting our show. We're brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging, to whom we are deeply grateful for their guidance and support. You can listen to the show live Monday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or stream us on WCOMFM.org. Archive shows can be found on the Orange County Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/aging, as well as a host of links to helpful resources and services for seniors in Orange County, North Carolina. We honor that the town of Carrboro and surrounding land was originally part of Saponi people's territory, which also included the Eno, Tutelo, and Socorro Nation. Lastly, questions and suggested topics for future shows can be emailed to outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. Thank you. Betty, Mac, you are up.
Okay. Okay. Great. Mac, yes, welcome. I'm not going to go through the long list of wonderful things you've done in your life. We'll be talking about that as the show goes on. But one thing I do want to mention is that Mac is also a trans man who began his transition at age 51, and that was in 1999, so about 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you have lived your full life, you know, for several decades, as you really feel like you are. That's a powerful place to be. And I made this assumption, but I think you're a little bit of an introvert, maybe just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're really happy you agreed to come and talk with us today.
Really happy.
Your life experience, just, I think it's going to be very much fun to talk about things. So one of the first things I was just curious about is, briefly, how would you introduce yourself today?
I had to think about that and was trying to do it as simply as possible. And I'm simply a person who's proud of everything I've gone through. Surviving and living my life finally is me. Mm-hmm. And it took a while, but I'm glad I finally did it. And I'm glad I had the time to live as me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And you're in your 77th
Late
year?
70s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I know one thing that we've gotten working with the Department on Aging from younger folks is younger queer folks don't know older folks. So it's really valuable for mm-hmm. us to talk and have these recordings available for them to hear. You know, they don't know what life is like when you get older. They don't see.
Yeah, and, you know, Judy and I mean, we all went through the AIDS crisis.
Right.
And the idea when you were younger that if you were gay or you blah, 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 you weren't going to live very long.
Right.
That was kind of the prevailing thought. And, of course, AIDS didn't help that.
Right.
And with trans women being murdered all the time, that doesn't help that. So I think it's important that we do have an outlet for older people mm-hmm. and younger people to get together and let younger people know, hey, you know, you can make it.
Yeah, you can age and have a very happy life.
Yeah.
That's good, good. Well, so give us a little background about yourself. Like, you know, earlier in life, who were you in the world back then, a kid, young adult, you know?
Well, I was born in Knoxville.
Tennessee?
Tennessee,
okay.
Yeah. Way back when. And And we lived in Tennessee until I guess was 6 years old.
Okay.
And then we moved to California, which was a good thing. But anyway.
It's interesting. I have never really been able to place your accent. So this is good to know.
I kept trying to lose the Tennessee accent.
Okay.
But I was convinced as a kid I was a boy. You know.
Really?
I ran around the neighborhood shirtless and had a couple of boyfriends, and we climbed trees and did mm-hmm. boy things.
What age are you remembering
that
from?
Would be under six.
Okay.
And I don't know when exactly it was, but, of course, my parents were... my father went to sea. He was in the Merchant Marine. He'd been in the Navy. My mother had been in the Navy during World War II, so she was fairly liberal for someone from Tennessee, but still, that was a no-go.
Right.
You know, and they wanted a little girl, and I was not being the little girl they wanted, so they told me at some point if I didn't stop, I would get put in an institution.
Well, as a little kid?
As a little kid. I didn't know what that was, but I know I didn't want to be there. So I kind of shut down a bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was an only child anyway. So my friends were cats and dogs and horses. I started riding at six, which was a great outlet because animals don't care about stuff like that. They really don't.
Right. They just love you the way you
are. You know,
love or not.
Or whatever, you know, but they interact with you on their terms, not your terms.
Right.
And you have to meet them halfway about that, which I think is a good thing for kids to learn no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved out to California, and I, you know, kind of just kept my head down. my father was gone most of the time because he was in the Merchant Marine. He went around South America all the time.
Okay.
So I did not grow up with him other than as a special occasion. I think despite the endless fights I had with my mother about wanting to curl my hair and wear dresses and all of that stuff, I think it would have been much worse had he been home.
What makes you say that?
Because he wanted a pretty little girl, you know.
Ah. Okay. I can relate a little bit. I had a dad who wanted a cute little girl, too.
And, so. I mean, he wasn't brutal about it, but I think at some point things would have gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was by no means conservative. As he got older, he got more conservative. But, you know, but still, I just didn't have that.
Okay, so it was mostly you and your mom, and mm-hmm, that's who you really had to interact with.
Yeah, and she put up with that a lot. But, I raised my first litter of puppies at eight. There were always dogs.
Wow.
And I insisted there had to be dogs. And
not just one or two. Well, you're talking a litter. That's
a litter of puppies, yeah. Well, we had gone to when we moved back to California, I wanted another dog. I'd had a Cocker Spaniel puppy years and years ago, but they said she ran off. We all know what that means.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever forgiven my parents for that. So we went to the pound, and there was another Cocker Spaniel who was so sweet and quiet. We got her, and 3 days later, she had puppies.
My goodness.
So we raised those puppies. We had their tails docked. We found homes for them and everything. Mm-hmm. Then when we had to move back to Tennessee, because my mother was having, I don't know why, but we moved back. She wanted to be around family.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to leave that dog. They found a home for her in a farm, you know.
Okay.
So first order of business, you don't trust your parents, ever.
Because they do away with your pets in some fashion. That's...
You know, it's like, well, anyway, but... when we went back to Tennessee, when I was 10 years old, I got a Chihuahua. And he was a big Chihuahua, and he was mean as a snake. Typical Chihuahua. I mean, he had ideas about everything.
Uh-huh.
But he taught me more about dog training than I could have ever learned. Because you can't make a Chihuahua do anything it doesn't want to do.
So
they'll fall on the ground screaming. They'll pass out. It just won't happen.
So you have to... Interact.
Everything is interactive and conditional. I'll do this if you do that, you know. And he lived to be 19.
My God.
Wow.
I did everything with him. I did obedience with him. You know, he terrorized the class. Yeah. He bit just about everybody but me and my mother, you know.
shouldn't laugh. I can just see that.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, he was terrifying. And when I was a little kid in Franklin, Tennessee, Franklin is now a big, you know, the country music mecca and everything. Mm-hmm. But back then, it was a little two-bit town. You know, and I'd run around town all mm-hmm. over the place, and I'd walk Chico, and I was walking him down the street, and the town drunk grabbed me by the shoulder and spun me around, and he just, I saw him fly around me, and he got the guy in the crotch and dug in. He was like, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get him off. So the guy ran off. I never saw him again, but, you know. So, don't ever underestimate what a Chihuahua can do or not do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, he taught me a lot about dogs. And as I got older and, you know, got into high school, I got mm-hmm. a Basset Hound and bred her and started being more serious about dogs.
So this really started, the animal
early.
Love started off really early.
And then when I left college, I was halfway through my junior year, and it was the 60s, and we were having the thing about the Vietnam War, and I wouldn't cross a picket line, so mm-hmm. I just dropped out, you know. So
okay.
And went to work at a dog kennel, a big professional dog kennel with a big dog handler who taught me how to groom show dogs, and that's how I got the show dog thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Neat.
Yeah.
Neat.
And, you know, dogs don't care, and frankly, dog people don't care either.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
don't care. Your
not
gender,
really,
anything.
Because when I started showing dogs on my own, showing people's dogs, I did not want to present female. So I'd wear, you know, nice slacks. I'd wear business attire, but mm-hmm. not skirts and stuff. Never had any problem. And then later on, when I got back in dogs in my 50s, when I started taking testosterone and was actively transitioning.
Right.
I just put on a suit jacket and a tie, and the judges who knew me as Miss were, sir, mm-hmm. no problem, you know.
Nice. So, they just took you for
it's a very enclosed thing, and there are a lot of very conservative people in dogs and a lot of very unconservative people in dogs, but, you know, you got to get along, and your focus is the dogs.
Right.
And you're working from 5 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, day after day, so, you know, you just don't worry about
things that are not dog
not important
related.
Yeah, you know, the dog is important, and uh-huh. if you have a string of dogs to take care of, that's what's important.
Right
So
you did a lot. I'm sure we'll talk more about the dogs part too.
Yeah, but it was actually a very safe place for me to transition.
That I would not have, well, I'm not sure what I would have thought about that, you know, as a place to transition, but it sounds like it was a good
because, like I say, the emphasis is on the dogs. I was still riding. I mean, I had a horse, not riding professionally. Mm-hmm. I eventually started teaching riding professionally, but horse people are kind of the same way. You would not believe how many gay cowboys there are out there. It's like, you know, it's a thing, you know, and uh-huh. nobody... You know, it's just not a big deal.
They take you for your skills.
For your skills.
And
you either
can
handle a horse or not. Mm-hmm. You can either handle a dog or not.
This is
and
really...
if you can't, you know, you're not going to make it anyway. Go uh-huh. do something else. But you're not always been being judged by what you're wearing or how mm-hmm. you present.
There's something I'd like to add something in here. Yeah. There's another thing about the people in the dog business, mm-hmm. dog show world, that they bind because they support one another. And Mac has been an amazing supporter for other new handlers.
Yeah.
To train them, to help mm-hmm. them figure
Young
out
people.
How do I groom my dog? How do I show my dog?
Those people helped me, you know.
Yep. And it's
somebody, you know, if... Look at it like, say, a Scottish Terrier, you know, and you see them on TV and they're gorgeous. Well, it takes months and it takes a lot of work. You have to have someone show you how to do that.
Groom it over time and get it to look that way.
It's an art form to pluck the hair in a uh-huh. certain, you know. So everything is about presentation of the dog.
Right.
Keeping the dog healthy, keeping it happy. That's why I like confirmation
mm-hmm.
as opposed to obedience or some of the other dog sports, particularly back in the day. There were some harsh training methods, but You can't have an unhappy dog in the show ring. If the dog is not genuinely with you and happy, it is not going to show. And you can't make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a matter of discipline.
You can't beat it into winning, right?
Yeah, that I would take in the ring and I'd work with them and try, and they just like, I don't want to do this. So you call the owner and say, well, mm-hmm. let's just send her home and she can have puppies and, you know.
Let her be
she
happy.
She just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I had chihuahuas again. I had one that would turn his back on the judge, her back. She was gorgeous. And they would follow her around and she'd turn her back, wouldn't look at him. I had one judge get on his knees, like, please look at.
She didn't really want to be there.
She didn't want to be there. So I sent her home.
Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing from what you and Judy said, part of it is you went in there, you know, showed people you were really good at what you did, and you were also working, you were friends. You made friends.
Yeah.
You know, befriended people, helped them learn the skills.
And that doesn't mean you wouldn't go in the best in show ring and practically slit each other's throat for that, you know.
Competitive for that moment.
Competition is one thing. It doesn't mean you're going to kill each other, though.
Yeah, I get that. That's my competitive.
You go out of the ring and you go have a beer or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but you know, you fight as hard as you can, because why be there if you don't want to be first?
But it was a safe place. Looking back, it was a very safe place to transition, because dog shows are like circle the wagons.
Yeah, I know. Just from what little I've seen on TV about that.
Yeah. So somebody off the street who wants to, say, molest a woman or something is not going to have a good day.
Yeah. And think about all the dogs coming out. Okay. Wow.
And all the dog owners. It's not the dogs. It's the owners you got to watch out for.
Yeah. I don't know, though. That little chihuahua you described that defended you by grabbing this guy's crotch.
He wasn't
putting up with anything.
No. And I know one time I'd stopped at a truck stop down South Carolina somewhere. And I had my little string of dogs. And I had a bloodhound I was showing. Big male, 150 pounds, with a big black mask, sweetest dog in the world, but imposing. And I stopped, and I got out of my van, and I was going to walk in and go pee and get some coffee. And some guys across the parking lot, there were like three or four guys, got out of a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still female at the time. I don't know what tricked it off, but they started walking towards me. And so I got the bloodhound out of the crate, took him out first.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of these dogs that announced himself. He would stretch, you know, do the whole stretch, and then just go, ooh, you know, this sound like a bomb going off, that howl.
Uh-huh.
They turned and ran. You know, they were way away, but it was just this huge dog that made the sound, and they were like, fuck, it's a bloodhound.
Okay.
I said the word.
It was very quiet. We didn't hear it.
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah. No, so anyway.
But so dogs have really been your friends the whole time. That's cool. The animals. Okay.
Yeah, they will do that, you know.
Okay.
Some take it too seriously. I showed an Akita, and they're great dogs for the right people, but they are extremely protective. They were the samurai dog, and they outweighed me by 50 pounds. So it's like if they went off, you have a problem. So,
yeah.
You know.
Wow. Okay.
But, yeah. You know.
Neat. Well, I'm going to ratchet you back a little bit.
Yeah, ratchet me
kinda,
back.
And kind of go, because you were talking about, you know, you were still presenting as female when you were doing some of the dog show work and all that.
Yeah.
What got you, I mean, how did you find the language for what? How did you get to transitioning at 50?
There was time. Okay, when I first started showing dogs, I was in the 70s.
Okay.
And then in the 80s, I joined the Army as a flute player. I went in, auditioned, was a professional flute player for 10 years, and had no problem getting in, and really had no problem fitting in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
I wore my hair as short as I could, get away with it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, people know, but as long as you, this was when you couldn't be gay in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, lots of people were.
You just didn't talk about it.
Just didn't talk about it. And if you did your job and kept your nose clean and yes, sir, yes, ma'am, no problem. But so I had that career. And then I got out and went back to college for music. Again, went through halfway through my junior year and quit. And we bought a horse farm. By then, I was working with horses.
Okay.
I was still female. So I kind of had that career of we bought a little horse farm, and I was teaching therapeutic riding, people who are disabled, and mm-hmm. we worked with a lot of autistic kids.
Nice.
And it was great. We went broke doing it. If you want to go broke, get horses. I mean, really.
But you did a lot of good is what it sounds
like. Well,
yeah.
And so, you know, and then we moved to the mountains, and I was riding and doing a lot of riding and mm-hmm. stuff. And we got into Basset Hound Rescue because I had owned Bassets and bred them, show Bassets, really mm-hmm. sweet dogs. You hear about puppy mills and stuff. Well, right. They've grown and grown and grown. And a lot of people with puppy mills will have a farm, and they'll take a chicken house and turn it into puppy kennels. And I mean, they pay no attention. They're purebred, but they pay no attention to breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And Bassets are a breed that if they're not bred correctly, they can have problems, not only physical problems, mm-hmm. but
mental, emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hounds are very sensitive, and if you piss off a hound one time, that's it.
They're not forgiving then.
They're not forgiving, and they will, if they can't get you, they'll get someone else sooner or later. So we just started doing Basset Rescue, and we had a lot of dogs that couldn't go anywhere else.
Okay.
Because they would eat you from the ground up. And we got along with them. We had some really sweet ones, too, that mm-hmm. we did eventually find homes for. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to find home for a slobbery, you know, 75-pound dog that everyone thinks is cute as a puppy, but
it drools everywhere.
They drool everywhere. Yeah, they're not a dog for everybody.
Yeah.
So we did that, almost 20 years. We had the Bassets.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in fact, we moved down here, and I started getting back in the dog business. You know, when the horses went up, I said, I know I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I started working for PetSmart just to get back into it, and then got in with breeders and started showing bloodhounds and mm-hmm. anything, basically.
Yeah.
And then we moved down here because we found a really nice kennel on 20 acres that was part of the house. So it was a place for our Bassets.
So down here in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could have my show, and you know, I started building up a show clientele mm-hmm. again, and started showing. So did that again.
Okay.
And then that was during that period. And what were we getting into? When did we move down here?
06.
06.
And you were, that was after you had transitioned then, right?
Yes.
I was still taking testosterone.
Okay. So you were still transitioning.
And one thing that happened that I didn't mention that sort of hurried the transition along, or at mm-hmm. least made it.
Don't worry about it.
Pop.
Uh-huh.
In my brain. I got breast cancer in 96 and went to the VA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a small, they caught it really early. And they said, oh, well, we can reconstruct the brain. I said, no, I want it off, completely off.
Okay.
And the doctor argued with me and argued with me. He was an elderly gentleman, sweet as he could be, but he didn't get it. And I said, I want it off.
Right.
And he said, well, you don't have to worry. I said, I'm not worried about getting cancer again. I just want the damn thing off.
Mm-hmm.
So which was like, oh, freedom.
So you had
just the
everything.
One.
Just the one.
He wouldn't
okay.
take the other one off. I okay. could not convince the VA
him.
To do that.
Okay.
And eventually I went to a plastic surgeon and just paid for it myself.
Okay.
Same thing with bottom surgery.
Mm-hmm.
About, what, 10?
07.
I had bottom surgery.
Okay.
And I paid for that myself.
Okay.
Because the VA had then started, I got the testosterone from them.
Okay.
You know, and they checked all of that and that was fine, but they weren't doing the surgeries.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they ever did.
Yeah.
We don't know. But
maybe not.
Anyway, they're not now. Anyway, right. They were. So that was that.
Yeah. So yeah. What made you decide, you know, I guess there's two things on my mind. What brought you to a place where, you know, was it that surgery or things going on before where you decided, I want to start presenting as a man. I remember this and
yeah,
I'm really
a man. Yeah, I started remembering things from my childhood over and over. And I mean, when I was in high school and I was a straight A student in high school, believe it or not.
I do, actually.
I was almost expelled in my junior year because I had a girlfriend. She wasn't a girlfriend. You know, I had my eyes on a cheerleader at that time, but
they thought it was a girl. Somebody thought it was a girlfriend.
Yeah, and they didn't expel me, but they switched our classes around. It was ridiculous, and of course my parents were like freaking out about that. So there was that, and. I know one of the questions was, who did I come out for? How was coming out for me?
Yeah.
And a lot of it was very easy because I was kind of presenting male. I mean, you know, everybody knows.
Right.
In fact, I was working for PetSmart as a dog trainer, and I had two people. I had a female, what do you call somebody?
Manager.
And a male. And I thought, well, it's getting time. I need to change using the bathroom. Because I was getting looks when I went in the women's bathroom. So I went in and told them both. And the female said, oh, thank goodness. So we were wondering. I was wondering. Thank you for telling us anything you need, blah,
nice.
Blah, blah.
Nice. Good.
And the guy was like, say what? What?
Couldn't wrap his head.
Can you do that? You know, he was just... I just want to let you know I'm going in the men's bathroom, so don't freak out. You know, and they didn't. No problem.
Good.
Never had a bit of problem in a men's bathroom.
You know, this is just really good to hear because I think sometimes fear stops us from just talking to people.
And you know, the time I walked in a woman's bathroom and a woman had a little toddler and she looked at me and grabbed the kid and ran out. I thought, okay, time to change.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I hadn't spoken to her or anything. You know, I really have not. I've had some vocal coaching, but I haven't had anything done to my voice.
Okay.
It kind of is what it is, but testosterone does lower it a bit.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Been around a few young people.
You can practice it. Yeah, and the first thing everyone says is, do you have a cold? Because your voice cracks all the time.
Okay.
It goes up and down. And I was teaching obedience classes and telling blah, 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 and my voice would go up and down the scale. It was like, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing, but that happens pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm a little curious. I mean, you and Judy were together before you transitioned.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to go there, one of my rules is I can ask any question I want. Yeah. If you don't want to answer it, you just say, not going there, next please.
Yeah.
So how was that? I mean, I imagine you had to come out to Judy in some fashion.
Yeah.
And would y'all be okay talking a little bit about that?
I'm you okay? I'm fine talking about it.
It doesn't have to be like
I was worried, and I still don't know what I would have done had she said no. You know?
You think it could have stopped you? Or would you, I guess...
I don't know.
Could have stopped you. You could have left. I know. There's all kinds of possibilities.
I didn't want
one of those
leave.
Things that you think you know what it would be like, but you don't know until you go there.
Yeah, exactly.
I can confirm all of this.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So when Max said to me, I'm a man, I was startled. It's like, what? So it took us a minute
to
sort out what does this mean. I had to get educated. Who am I in this relationship? Who am I going to? Am I still going to be here? So it took us about a year to cut. In fact, we lived separately and we dated.
Yeah, which was fun.
Okay.
That was fun because I never really got to date her.
I think that's cool.
I didn't. We're not talking about it. Never mind.
That's okay. You don't have to. Like I said, you can stop it. But go ahead.
It was kind of fun. Actually, I never really dated anybody because I had to keep to myself as a closeted gay person. And then I was busy showing dogs, and you don't have time to do anything when you're showing, you know.
You had a full life.
Yeah. So I know, and I want to get this in because I had forgotten about it and I didn't put it down. But when I was 28, this was in the 70s, I was still living with my mother. But I was working in a horse barn, I think, at that time as a groom. That's another story, but not now. I knew she knew. But I finally came in and said, look, I'm gay. You know, I actually had a girlfriend at that time and blah, blah, blah.
By she, you mean your mother or the person at the horse?
No, my mother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she backhanded me and told me it wasn't my fault. I mean, it wasn't her fault. I was adopted. So I had gotten to 28 and not known I was adopted.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, that explains a lot of shit, you know?
Oh, thank goodness.
And what a response is all I can say.
And I didn't say anything. Okay, I went down and fed dogs or did what I had to do, and we never spoke about it again, you know. There you go.
You came out, and that was it, and boom. Okay.
Was your father still around? Did you have to come
No, he
him?
Died in 1970.
Okay.
Yeah, he he was a three-pack-a-day guy and
No, that's right.
Dropped early. It would have not gone well with him, I'm pretty sure. But, you know, who knows?
Okay. Well, look, thank you both for being willing to talk a bit about this. And it sounds, I'm glad you had a chance to date. That sounds like it was fun.
Yeah, it was actually fun. And PFLAG helped Judy, and then we'd go to PFLAG conventions and meet all kinds of people from all over at all different ages, you know, going through transition and what do we do, and, you know. And this was towards the late 90s when people were transitioning. A lot of what we'd call butch lesbians or masculine women were going, you know, and looking at, do I want to transition or not?
Right. You know. Is that me or not?
Exactly. Yeah, and it takes time, and it's great when you have people that stay with you. A lot of people don't, you know.
Yeah.
And they just have to navigate their life a little differently.
Yeah, because it's a more visible change. Like me coming out as a lesbian, it's like, okay, fine. You know, it's just really different.
You know, I think the bathroom thing is a biggie, because that's like a line of demarcation, you know.
A very definite one.
And now it's going to get, weaponized. They're weaponizing going to the bathroom, so.
Right. Know. Yeah, and we know it's happened a few times before. But, you know, I think that's part of why I'm grateful for places that actually have gender-neutral bathrooms and just go.
You know, it was funny when I was in the Army, and I spent 5 years in an Army band in Germany, and we would tour a lot in France. And we had done a full fancy dress concert and everything, so we were in dress blues, the whole thing. I was still female, so the skirts down to the wazoo. We stopped in the middle of nowhere in somewhere in France, pitch black. They had a little house, you know, like a to pee. And we walked in there. The girls all went in one side. The guys came in the other side, but it was the same building. It was open. And I know one of the girls next to me was like, there are men in here. And I'm like, well, they got to pee too. You know, it's, you know, in France, it's like, well, people got to pee. Just get over it.
Just and do it. And then be done
and then
go.
Walk out. You know, that's good. No big deal.
As long as you wash your hands.
Wash your hands, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, do you want to do a mid?
I can do a little
A little bit break and let us rest our voices a little bit.
It's a message from our sponsor, the Department on Aging. The one thing that I'm thinking about right now is the opportunity that Betty and Robin and I have to create this show has come from the Department on Aging at Orange County. And we are members of a senior resource team for the LGBTQ plus community. And it has opened so many avenues for us to share our lives, to share our stories, and to support one another. I can't say enough about the support we get from the Department on Aging.
Absolutely.
It's mm-hmm. And I invite any of you, and it doesn't, you don't have to be old.
Whatever that means.
What is the lowest age? I mean, what is the age you can join?
You can come to our events
right,
after but, five. But to
after five?
Yeah. We've had little folks come to our stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
our fun events.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, age-specific, but to qualify to use the services that are available.
Oh, yeah.
I think 55 is the
55.
Age. 55
mm-hmm.
plus, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And we have put together some amazing, amazing events. Mm-hmm. Our next one, my friends, in December, the first Wednesday in December, is a potluck and movie.
A rom-com movie.
Yes. We're going to have
happy gay
fun
story.
Yes. So do come. Watch out for the Endless Possibilities publication that is about 70 pages of activities and classes and fun stuff to do for the aging community in Orange County. And it just is amazing. You find them at grocery stores and the library. It's called Endless Possibilities.
Churches. I know
at churches,
at churches
right.
in
yep.
the area.
And at the senior centers as well.
Yeah, I'm going to pop in and say, and there is an event happening actually Wednesday night. If
tomorrow
any,
night.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
Tuesday night.
I thought it was Wednesday.
Today is Tuesday.
I know, but I believe it's Wednesday night at Brew's Public House.
It's on Tuesday.
Yeah, we're having like
don't pay attention to Betty.
Well, it's look it up somewhere. It's just we're having a regift rumble in the evening, and just come and have a drink around some friendly gay people. If you'd want to join us, we would be happy to have you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's called a regift rumble, which is also known as a white elephant.
Yeah.
Gift party,
so,
which is just great fun.
Yeah, it's like something $20 or less or some white elephant thing you have in the house. Wrap it up.
Right.
We'll just
it's
have a big old
fun.
Free-for-all.
Yeah.
And they have Guinness on draft, I discovered. So,
hopefully they have wine.
So, Well, cool. And don't forget to vote tomorrow if you haven't voted.
We voted.
Yep.
Good. Do that tomorrow.
Yeah. And back to you.
Okay, great, great. So, you've talked a lot about, you know, you've really covered a lot of the things we had talked about talking about. So I'm wondering if we just ought to go towards your creative stuff, because I think, you know, you were a professional musician in the Army, you said, for 10 years.
And before that, both in high school and both colleges, I played in orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were semi-professional orchestras. In fact, I met her in an orchestra.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, did you do private lessons as well as others?
Yeah, you have to take.
Right.
And one great thing about Germany is I got to, because if you join the Army as a musician, they will pay for your music expenses.
Oh.
I mean, they'll give you a flute and stuff, an instrument.
Right.
And I had a really good flute. But I wouldn't take that out on the field.
Right.
But they would pay for lessons, so I got to take from the principal flute of the Stuttgart Opera Orchestra, which meant I got to go to the opera free anytime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was in town, we traveled a lot with the band. So, but I think I saw for 5 years, I saw almost all of the operas and ballets.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would be sitting up at the, you know, looking down over the pit and everything.
Right.
They just, you know, if you get in free, you sit, you squeeze in anywhere.
Wherever.
But But I got to study with him, and he was at that time concertizing all over Europe. Really, really, really fantastic flute player. I would put him in the James Galway category in terms of his musicianship. So
that, I mean, it sounds like you studied decades then.
You know, you know, the Army, it's a good way for young people to decide if they want a music career or not, because you are put in a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what's going on, how you feel, whatever, you've got to get up, get in uniform, and play that horn, whatever it is.
You have to perform.
Yeah. And sometimes it's rough, and sometimes it's fun, you know. But it's a good testament, and I wish I'd done it much younger. If I'd gone in to the Army when I was in my 20s, I think I would have and the only reason I got out was because my feet went.
Ah, because you still have to be a soldier then, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and my right foot, I got a bunion, and they operated on it, and my foot just kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't march all day.
So that
was that.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a good way to know. And a lot of musicians that have gone on to be professionals got their start in the services.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, you have to be on time. You know, there's none of this walking in, tuning your violin, mm-hmm. and sitting down and whatever. No.
Discipline.
Yeah, it's a discipline. And it's also, I look at it not so much as discipline, but it's an insult to your fellow players if you're late. Because then you got to retune, and you got to do, you know, mm-hmm. and then you're making all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that doesn't happen in the military.
Yeah. No prima donnas.
Not more than once.
Yeah, so you learn to be a team player, and either it works for you or you're gone.
Yeah, yeah, you know? You have to decide, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have to do X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z to do it.
Yeah, did you play anything besides flute then or other times?
No. Well, yeah, actually I took up violin and viola.
That was later?
Much later, mm-hmm. yeah.
Piccolo?
Huh?
You played the piccolo.
Well, yeah, I played piccolo. If you play flute, you play piccolo.
That's what I was wondering.
And I love the piccolo,
mm-hmm.
Particularly for a band. Flutes are useless. You could have 20 of them and you can't hear them because the band's so loud. That's why I wear earplugs.
Uh-huh.
I started wearing earplugs my first band gig. Couldn't stand it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it'd make me physically sick. The noise.
You may have saved your ears then.
Yeah, that's the only reason I'm still here.
Yeah.
Because most of the people, like when I was in the Fife and Drum Corps, we played with the Army band, the big one.
Right.
And I remember talking to one of the drummers. We were hanging around all day because we had gigs all day.
Right.
And he was talking about his ears. He said, yeah, you know, I can't hear my cymbal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He has to watch his cymbal to see if it's vibrating.
Wow.
Because he was in 20 years gone. Yeah.
That's just... That's
but I had to fight to wear earplugs. But the Army, there's an Army reg, and I'm sure it's in all the other services. Mm-hmm. If you work in a noisy environment that where the decibel level is above blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
you must wear hearing protection. Because if you don't, the Army has to pay for you.
Okay.
If you come out deaf... They got to pay.
So you brought that up to them as part of your fight?
Yeah, I had to show them the reg. My CO was mm-hmm. pissed. I said, I don't care. I'm not losing my ears for this. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you start a trend? Did other folks do that?
Yeah. And I think now more and more they're saying, you stick them in.
Do it. That's good. So music's been a big part of your life. What about, I know you've been doing a lot of writing.
Yeah.
Has that been, like, since long ago or something you took up later?
Yeah, I think I wrote my first little book at 8.
That's
I found
ago.
It the other day. It's actually had a beginning, middle, and an end, you know.
and you still have it with all these moves and everything?
Somewhere.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. I did a lot of short story writing and poetry. I had a lot of poetry published here and there and everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they give you... a copy of the magazine, or they give you $10 or whatever. It's writing for money is kind of marginal.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're writing hold-up notes or something, you know, you're not going to make
formula
money.
Romances,
and now,
like that.
You know, I keep thinking, well, I got back into music, and I'm writing music now, which is...
That's true. Composition. We talked about that.
Composition,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always made up tunes. When I was a kid, I'd go on a piano and make up tunes for hours. Never learned to play the piano. Couldn't read music or anything, but my father was very musical. He played in the Grand Ole Opry. One of my first memories was sitting on the banjo player, whatever his name was, the guy who got shot. I can't think of his name, but, you know, at the Opry. Just listening to, so I kind of grew up around all of that music.
Right.
And then discovered classical music, and that was it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And country music has changed so much, I don't even recognize it anymore.
Yeah. What captured your imagination about classical music?
We had a record of Hansel and Gretel, the opera. And the overture to that is just simply gorgeous. And I would listen to that even as a kid. And then I got more records, you know, and I would conduct and, you know. And I watched cartoons. And anybody my age who watched cartoons, you heard, you know, everything. Bugs Bunny and the whole thing, they all used classical music because it works.
And it was out of copyright.
It was out of copyright, and it works.
Yeah,
you know,
it does. And
emotionally,
it still does.
And, and physically, it works for animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, loved it. And both my parents liked it, too. So... You know, we kind of grew up either listening to, and growing up in California, the radio stations had classical music on it when we first moved out there. I don't know what they're playing now, but so, you know, we had options.
So I'm remembering something I wanted to ask you too, related to your military, your veteran status. What has been your experience as a trans man with the VA? If you're okay sharing that.
They've been great.
Okay.
I have been, you know, it's not an issue. I have blood tests, what, once or twice a year, I think. And they check testosterone levels and, you know, make sure I am getting it. And that's actually been a boon because that stuff's expensive if you have to buy it off, you know. So I've felt very supported, and I've met a lot of trans guys about my age that are, in, you know,
veterans?
Going one way or the other. Veterans, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Like
so
you said, you know,
it's you know, I people downgrade the VA, and I don't know why. Yeah, there are long lines. There's a lot of people who have to wait. You know, you have to wait anyway. Judy has to wait to get her doctor, you know?
You're right.
My personal experience has been very good, you know? Like I said, and I've been with the VA since, gosh.
96,
yeah.
Yeah, so when you were... Not in North Carolina, right?
Right, up in Virginia.
Okay.
The D.C. VA was the first one I went to.
Okay.
And then I went, when we moved out to the mountain, I went to Morgansville or Morgantown.
Martinsburg, I think. West Virginia.
West Virginia. Not a good VA. Well, I mean, it was way out in the country, and it's a small town, and I hadn't... I don't think I'd actually started transitioning then, but I was still, you know, looked pretty much like I do now.
Right.
And I went in for a breast exam, and they freaked out. They got a guard to take me back to the window, and I'm like, what is the problem?
What did they freak out about? Yeah.
Because I looked male to them.
Okay.
You know.
And at that point, had you had one breast removed and the other... Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. But you still have to have things checked.
Right. And that makes sense.
Even men get breast cancer.
I know that. I actually know a man who had breast cancer.
And it's more dangerous because it can hide. You can't
feel it all as easily.
You really have to have imagery to find something.
Right.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so they were, but, you know, they were okay about it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it was not the best.
Isn't that where you met Dr. Bat Mackin?
No, he was with the VA in...
He was West Virginia.
Here?
Here,
yeah.
My bad. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And he was great.
Well, good. Thanks for letting me kind of redirect from creative stuff to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about, you know, the VA services that are good.
Yeah, and, you know, I can get a... I have a... Not a psychiatrist, but a...
Occupational therapist.
Yeah. And I'll mm-hmm. you know, I'll have a bout of just once a month calls if there's anything. And, you know, they just kind of check in on you.
Nice.
I don't know what the effect of the current administration is having on all that.
Right.
Because they're letting people go in droves.
But so far it has not impacted you.
Not personally, knock on wood.
Okay.
You know, I hope we can get out of it and get back to...
mm-hmm.
And I do want to say one thing that... your question, what would you tell other folks who are late in later life and feel drawn to transition? I would tell them, do it if you're in a safe place.
When you say safe place, what are you thinking about?
You're living somewhere where you're around people... I don't know, not living on the streets necessarily. You know, you're in a safe environment. And if you're not, try to move somewhere that is. Because I know mm-hmm. a lot of people don't have family or they walk away from their family. You know, when my mother died and we went down and buried her and all of that, I walked away from everybody in Tennessee. I haven't been back to Tennessee since.
Mm-hmm. So that was it for your
that was it.
Tennessee
yep.
family.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only reason I'd go back is if I had to go to a dog show, but I wouldn't go. You know, so that's done. But so a lot of people just leave that life behind. But if they do have supportive family members or friends or whatever, then I would say not to let their age
stop them.
Because you know, I've not had one doctor say, oh, well, you're too old to do this. You can't, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, you know, I can see it's an issue, and you know, but if you feel like you're in a place where you really want to do that, and you're in an environment where you can do it, then there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And there's every reason to do it.
Every reason.
Yeah. My experience from the spouse across the table here, when Mac transitioned, I had access to more of who he was on the planet. So there was my love was bigger. There was more
mm-hmm.
more of him
not
in my relationship mm-hmm. with him. Right. There was less depression, there was less holding back, there was I got to tell you, he walks better.
Well, I'm a little limpy now after the fall, but, you know.
But, you know, it sounds like, I mean, do you feel that way, too, like you're more yourself?
Yeah.
Right now?
Yeah.
And not having to hide or, you know, accommodate?
Yeah. I'm not sure I ever totally hid, but I did accommodate. And, you know, and... But, you know, I think, looking back, I was really lucky. I was lucky, for one thing, to grow up in California. Even though it was mm-hmm. still illegal and all that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there was just a different way of being in California than there was in Middle Tennessee.
Right.
And East Tennessee, don't go there. You know, it's beautiful, just don't go there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I would go to dog shows, and we were living up here, and I would drive down to southern dog shows, and I'd have to go down, you know, through eastern the Appalachian, which mm-hmm. are beautiful. But, man, I didn't like to stop at night and get out of my truck or car or whatever I was driving. It just...
It didn't feel safe, it sounds like.
It just didn't feel safe. I know one time I stopped in the middle of nowhere for a cup of coffee. It was dark. I had an Irish Terrier at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
a very
fairly
famous
small.
Irish huh? Terrier.
Very famous Irish Terrier. She, if you want a protection dog, they're great. She was about 18 inches tall at the shoulder. Looked like a small red Airedale.
Hmm.
And
that's okay. Finish your story.
Okay. So I stopped for a cup of coffee, came out with my coffee. She was in the seat next to me, curled up on the seat. She went with me everywhere. I put my hand to open the door, and I felt this big hand on my shoulder. A guy had followed me out. And mm-hmm. I opened the door, and she just shot over my shoulder. And whoever he is, he's still running. Because she did. Irish Terriers don't warn. They don't growl.
They
don't
just
do anything. They just,
like.
There's a problem. Boom, I'm going to take care of it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And she saved Judy, too.
Gosh, well, I'm.
That's another story for another day.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. Mac, thank you, though. Yeah. You've had a really varied life, and it's been a great conversation.
I've been grateful for it, you know. So
good.
You do what you do. Good. I've been grateful to Judy. You guys. Yep.
All right.
Oh,
well, that's our show for today. We never have enough time for these things. Thank you so much, Mac, for your innumerable contributions to our community and arts and to dogs.
Yeah, maybe we'll have another talk about the arts sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because anyway, we would also, while we're thanking each other, like to thank again WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carborough at 103.5 FM and the Orange County Department on Aging for making Out on the Edge a reality. But we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for your support. Remember, you can contact us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. Judy, take us out.
All righty. I have a quote this evening from Alan Rickman about our stories that we tell. It's a human need to be told stories. The more we're governed by idiots and have no control over our destinies, the more we need to tell stories to each other about who we are, why we are, where we come from, and what might be possible.
Wonderful.
What's beautiful.
I agree.
That's why you do this.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.